Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up, a huge show for you this morning featuring two great authors of a pair of fantastic books. College football is a whole new game. CBS sports writer John Talty on his new book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. And the one and only Bill O'Reilly discusses the first title in his brand new book series, Confronting the Presidents. Also this morning, the Findlay Trojans go on the road at Springfield to start the second half of the season. We'll get our high school football preview. In our community and business spotlight, the 10th annual Oktoberfest is Findlay's biggest party of the year. And in honor of this weekend's Oktoberfest, we have a collection of German recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, September 27th, 2024. So the election now right around the corner, and interesting numbers here. Republicans appear to be far, far outspending Democrats this month in the U.S. Senate race in Ohio. The tracking firm Ad Impact reports that Bernie Moreno and the groups that are supporting him have funneled about $70 million just this month. From September 1st through this past Wednesday, $70 million on radio, TV, and online ads. That is roughly double the reported ad spending during that period for incumbent Democrat Sherrod Brown. So this is an expensive race. We knew it was going to be, but Republicans really turning up the heat, turning up the rhetoric this month to convince people to vote for Bernie Moreno. Now, that being said, Democrats were dropping more cash on advertising through the summer, spending more than $78 million from the March primary through the end of August, as compared with $59 million for the Republicans. But think about that. The Democrats spent $78 million from March through the end of August, from the primary through the end of August. But from September 1st to now, Republicans, the Moreno camp, and those who support the Moreno campaign have dumped nearly the same amount just in this month alone. That is amazing. A lot of money being spent to secure that seat. Tells you how critical it is. Couple of other things among the first things you need to know this morning. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Hopefully, we get enough of a break in the rain that we can get Oktoberfest in tomorrow. Downtown Findlay, the biggest party of the year. Got a preview coming up here in just a bit. But it is going to be a huge event, huge fundraiser for the Hancock Historical Museum, too. And we certainly don't want it to be a washout. Now, it's going to happen, rain or shine. But hopefully, we'll get a break in the rain. We'll be able to have some fun downtown for Oktoberfest. But if you are looking for some more fun this weekend, it doesn't stop there. El Dorado Gaming Scioto Downs in Central Ohio is hosting some family-friendly fun. The Big Bounce America Tour is running through Sunday at Scioto Downs. The Big Bounce America Tour. Operators say it includes the world's largest bounce house, plus several other huge inflatable attractions. And again, you know, we get the rain and the wind. That can be a little dangerous for bounce houses. So hopefully they're able to get it in. But details and tickets are available by visiting TheBigBounceAmerica.com. TheBigBounceAmerica.com. That'd be worth checking out, I think. The largest bounce house in the world. Just in case you're looking for more to do this weekend, if Oktoberfest isn't enough for you, you know? You can go down there today or Sunday or, you know, whatever. But let's see what else is going. Oh, here is big news too. Talking about things going on, and we're getting into that time of the year. Autumn, winter is coming. Hibernation season is coming for the Aminals, And at Katmai National Park and Preserve, they are getting ready for their annual Fat Bear Week celebration. This is always a lot of fun. Fat Bear Week is next week. And the contest, in case you're not familiar with this, the contest allows fans to vote for their favorite chunky bears in a tournament-style bracket. The Fat Bears at Katmai National Park and Preserve in Alaska. 1.3 million votes were placed last year in the yearly event celebrates the resilience of the 2,200 brown bears that take up residence in the park as they fatten up for winter. Contestants will be announced on Monday, and the voting will take place October 2nd through the 8th. So the Fat Bear Week is coming. That is big news. Definitely want to make sure that you are aware of that. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. Were you a helicopter parent when your kids were younger? A lot of parents, that's kind of the term for parents that are constantly hovering over their kids and never letting them stand on their own two feet, right? Helicopter parents. And we all know a helicopter parent or two. We all know people who are guilty of this. Maybe you are yourself. Well, be forewarned, turnabout is fair play. This apparently is a new thing. The kids of helicopter parents helicoptering their parents once they get older. Sherry Howard is a 53-year-old who was on social media the other day, and this has taken off and gone viral, explaining that her children are tracking her now using the Find My People service on her phone, which is kind of interesting. The Harris poll found that 1 in 6 respondents, 1 in 6 people, always have location sharing on their mobile device turned on. And I would imagine there are probably a fair number of older folks who don't even realize that you can do this, much less know how to turn it on or off. But if you were not aware, it's worth investigating how you turn that off so that, you know, you can maintain some semblance of privacy in this technologically connected world, because this is a thing. As Ms. Howard was saying, her kids are tracking her on her device. And she says to all of the grown kids out there, stop stalking your parents. But I'm thinking turnabout is fair play. I mean, you are a helicopter parent to your kids. Expect to be helicoptered by your kids now that you are older. Millennials and Gen Zers in particular seem to be helicopter parenting their parents these days. I didn't even know that was a thing, but apparently it is growing in popularity. And you reap what you sow is the message there. And lastly here, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. You remember about a week and a half ago, we were talking about the Dodgers' Shohei Ohtani having maybe one of the single best days that any Major League Baseball player in history had. He had he went 6 for 6 at the plate, had 3 home runs. He became the first player to hit 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in the same season. Was a huge night for Shohei Ohtani. And now the record-setting ball that he knocked out of the park on that night that he became the first member of the 50-50 club, the record-setting ball that he hit the home run, the record-setting home run with, it's set to be auctioned off, but now is the subject of a lawsuit. Let's see here, 18-year-old Max Mattis is suing the purported owner of the ball because he says he caught the baseball, but it was pulled from his hands by another fan who has now put the ball up for auction. And video from the game actually shows a scuffle over the ball. So, I don't know. There appears to be some validity to this 18-year-old's claim. The auction for the ball, by the way, has a starting bid of $500,000. So there's big money at stake here in this auction. Golden Auctions, which is conducting the sale, says in a statement that they are aware of the lawsuit, but the auction is going forward, at least for now. They are moving forward with the auction. I would imagine they would just basically hang on to the proceeds of the sale of the ball until the courts can sort out who is the rightful owner of this. Or maybe the two subjects in the lawsuit, the plaintiff and defendant, will come to some sort of agreement to share the revenue from the auction of the ball. But I'm actually kind of surprised that this doesn't happen more often with some of this historical sports memorabilia. You know what I mean? I'm a little surprised that this doesn't happen more often, but stay tuned and see what happens with Shohei Ohtani's ball, record-setting baseball that is going up for auction. It's kind of interesting. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers possible today, windy, a high in the mid-70s. Rainy and windy tonight, a low in the mid-60s. Finley police officers rushed Donnell Middle School on Thursday morning after receiving a 911 call that a gun was seen at the school. Officers searched the school and determined there were no active emergencies ongoing and no gun was found. As a precaution, the school was locked down while the matter was investigated further. Police say through investigation of the call that was made, an 11-year-old girl, a student at Donnell Middle School, was determined to be in possession of the phone that was used to make the call. The girl was located and confessed to making the hoax call. She was placed under arrest and incarcerated for inducing panic, a second-degree felony. Get more details in this story on our website. AEP Ohio is sending more than 100 crew members from across the state down south to help with relief efforts from Hurricane Helene.
Matt Bennett, Director of Operations with AEP Ohio, says crews have prepared and trained for moments like these and are ready to go.
Our crews here, they do take a lot of pride in the fact that, you know, they've been called upon. This is part of the rewarding part of the career, whether we're restoring power here at home or in a different state.
Crews are packed for 14 days and will stay as long as their help is needed.
ONN's Kristen McFarland reporting. Next University of Findlay Fridays at Findlay Lecture Series will feature Director of the Ohio Department of Development and former Findlay Mayor Lydia Mihalik. A 2002 University of Findlay graduate, Mihalik will discuss Ohio's workforce of the future, including workplace trends and challenges and how the Ohio Department of Development is helping Ohioans prepare for future employment. The discussion will also focus on the skills and abilities that will be in demand, how technology and automation will affect jobs, and what businesses, workers, customers, and communities can expect. The event is open to the public and will take place on Friday, October 4th. Get more details, including how to register for the lecture and the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
You know, college football has long been America's most popular sport, but it looks completely different today than it did a generation ago, heck, even a decade ago. Some would say it has changed for the better. Some would say it has changed for the worse. But either way, that change comes at a price. National sports writer and best-selling author John Talty is with us this morning. He is co-author with Armin Katayan of the new book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. And just from the title, John, I take it that you believe, as many people do, that college football is kind of standing at the edge, looking over a precipice.
It is. I think that it's, you know, at an inflection point right now where we've seen a massive amount of change, some for the better, some for the worse. There has not been a lot of oversight. The NCAA has been put into a position where it can't do much, if anything, without getting sued. And I think there's, you know, real questions about what it looks like moving forward, whether that's a year from now, 5 years from now, a decade from now. You know, it's a sport that, you know, so many of us love and care about, and you know, we want it to be as good as it can be. And again, I think there's been ways that it's improved because of some of the massive change we've seen over the last few years. I think some ways it has, you know, gotten worse. And, you know, there just needs to be some solutions, and there needs to be a system built, I think, that can be sustainable for college football to be the best that it can be. And I think there's real open questions about, you know, what that's going to look like, and who are the people making those decisions.
So let me get your take on what's been a positive change and what's been a negative change. What, you know, some of the biggest factors, what would you put in which category?
Yeah, well, I think people have felt for a while now that players should be getting, you know, some sort of compensation or be able to capitalize on, you know, their popularity. And you can think back to Tim Tebow, a Johnny Manziel, you know, these guys who were huge names, and the schools have made tremendous amount of money off of them, and they weren't able to sell jerseys or autographs. And in fact, they got in trouble at times for those kind of things. So
right.
I think allowing players to, you know, make money off of their popularity is something that should have happened a long time ago. And I think it's a great thing. I think the downsides to me are the fact that there are essentially, as multiple coaches put it to me, like, there's no cops on the roads right now trying to stop anybody from speeding, right? So, you know, you got some schools that are doing whatever they want and blatantly violating these different rules. You got some schools that are trying to play by the rules and almost being penalized because they're not willing to do more. It's a weird world where there's just not much regulation. And I think that led to a lot of frustration for guys. I think Lane Kiffin has put it well when he spoke about it in the past, where, you know, only in college football could you have two periods of free agency, one of which is happening during the most important part of the season, and guys able to come and go with no contracts. Like,
yeah.
The NFL could not survive
right.
if you had guys in the playoff leaving to go to another team. You know, that's like kind of incredible to think about, but that's the world that we currently live in. So, you know, that's been a real headache and challenge, I think, for coaches, and why a lot of them would like to see, whether it be contracts, some sort of regulation so that, you know, you don't lose key guys part of your team right when you're playing and trying to win a national championship.
Yeah. So in the book, you pull from literally hundreds of interviews to put together the book. You dive into many of the most headline grabbing stories of the past couple of seasons of college football. Which one or ones were the most fascinating, the most surprising, maybe the one with the most unexpected twists and turns along the way?
Yeah, I think there were a few. I mean, so at the start of this journey, which, you know, for me started about 2 or so years ago, I think Armin joined me along the way about a year and a half ago, a little bit longer than that. You know, we decided to focus on people like Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, when we started that journey, we knew they were interesting. We knew they were two of the top guys of the sport. We didn't know that by the end of our journey, both of them would be out of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we couldn't have anticipated, of course, at the beginning. And, you know, I didn't know that we would have to be writing about a sign stealing scandal, which continues to dominate the headlines with the recent Connor Stallions documentary. So, you know, that was just a general one. But, you know, I think like digging deep into, you know, how the NCAA is trying to enforce recruiting and NIL, I think I did a lot of behind the scenes reporting on the Jaden Rashada situation, which was one of the first, you know, really big NIL cases where, you know, he was offered close to $14 million to go to Florida. That deal ended up, you know, falling apart at the last second, and they're currently embroiled in lawsuits against each other. You know, I think those are some details that certainly surprised me, the extent of how bad that thing got. But yeah, there's just a lot of, I think, you know, interesting anecdotes, fun stories. I think, you know, guys who maybe you think you know something about, but don't know the whole picture.
Yeah.
And for me, that chapter might be, you know, the top one for that chapter might be Jimmy Sexton, the guy who we all know is an important player, but I don't think many people know, you know, how and why he's as good at what he is. And maybe don't know anything about his personality because he hangs in the shadows. And that was probably the hardest chapter to write in many ways because of how secretive he is. But one of the ones that I feel probably the best about kind of what we're able to come up with at the end.
And what's interesting is none of these stories happen in a vacuum. And the common underlying thread is what many see as the obscene amount of money that is involved in the sport.
Yeah, I think money impacts everything, right? And there's certainly people that believe that that pursuit of that last dollar, the almighty dollar, however you want to put it, is corrosive. And it certainly had you know, major impact. I mean, I think you look, I think the Pac-12 is a great example of this, where mm-hmm. this was an iconic conference for more than 100 years, produced people like Jackie Robinson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You know, I saw the ACC trying to claim her recently, produced somebody like, you know, Missy Franklin. And, you know, this is a conference that had all these things going for it. And why did it implode? It was because of money.
Right.
What kind of money? It was TV money. And I think that the alleged, you know, leaders of the sport, the caretakers of the sport, which is primarily run by university presidents, have, you know, ceded all power to TV money. And that is what shapes the decisions. It shapes the games that we see on Saturdays. It shapes the conferences we see. It shapes the money that coaches get and soon players will get in it. You know, they've given up all leverage and power to these TV networks, and that's led to a lot of good things, led to a lot of money, but it's also led to some, I think, unfortunate things. And I think when I think about what makes college football special, it's not necessarily all of what's happening on the field. It's what's happening outside of it. It's the rivalry games. It's mm-hmm. the unique environment that you get
Absolutely.
When you're walking in the Grove on a Saturday. And, you know, we're going to be losing some of that because of these decisions that have been made, where you're not going to see, you know, some of these Pac-12 games that we're used to seeing over the years. And well, I think that's sad. I think that's a real loss for the sport.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I wanted to mention, because, you know, in the meantime, while all of this gets sorted out, wherever the dust settles, piece by piece, we continue to lose some of what makes college football great in the first place, whether we're talking about the rivalry games, the demise of, you know, historical power conferences like the Pac-12. You've got some of the legends of the game. Nick Saban, you know, is a prime example, stepping away from the game. You know, we are losing something, and you have to wonder how many more iterations of college football do we have to go through before the dust really settles?
Yeah, it's, I think college football, you know, it's just such an interesting moment because of all of those things you just listed. And I think, you know, even I sometimes am mixed about some of these things. And I'll give you a perfect example, especially for your audience. Like, I am already so fired up about Ohio State, Oregon. It might be the game of the year. I think it's going to be two of the top teams in the country. I can't wait to see that game. And that game would not exist if there wasn't conference realignment driven yep. by TV money. Yep. But on the flip side, I've talked to so many fans, especially recently, who have told me, you know, I don't even know who's on our team anymore, right? Like, there's not that, you know, close, maybe personal attachment to certain players because they change so often. Or maybe you just got a new QB, like Ohio State, Will Howard. Like, do you have a close bond to Will Howard as an Ohio State fan? Mm-hmm. There's no way you could. You haven't seen him even play in a game yet. And
yeah.
so that, I think, is one of the inherent challenges. And, you know, we talked to a lot of people, again, like, Armin and I love college football. We talk to a lot of people who love college football. We want what's best for the sport. And, you know, one of the book ends where we talked to Roy Kramer, who was, you know, coach in Central Michigan, was the SEC commissioner. And he kind of talks about what you were just saying. Like, in many ways, the sport has never been better. But in many ways, I really wonder whether we're losing the soul of college football. And that is that, you know, that's kind of the crossroads that college football is at right now. And I really hope that they figure it out. And I really hope that we continue to see amazing games and we get to see, you know, these programs rise up. But I do think there's a fear, maybe 10 years from now, that our fans as attached to their programs as yeah. they once were without those rivalry games and close attachment to individual players.
It's a question that a lot of fans are asking. John Talti again with us this morning, co-author with Armin Katayan of the new book, The Price, What It Takes to Win in College Football's Era of Chaos. Really quickly, do you have a website in conjunction with the book we can guide folks to?
Yeah, I mean, you can buy the book anywhere that you buy books. I know for a lot of people, the easiest is probably Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Books A Million is a big one. You can certainly ask your local independent bookstore to get it in for you as well. But yeah, you can probably go on Amazon right now. It'll probably be in your mailbox by the next day if you order it. So whatever's best for the people. Yeah, it's whatever's easiest for you is great. But you know, I really appreciate the support. And I really think if you're a college football fan, you're interested in, you know, learning more about Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban, Kirby Smart, Lane Kiffin, all these different guys, I think this book is really going to be in your wheelhouse and something that people will really enjoy.
John, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
So the second of our authors to speak with this morning and a couple of terrific books. After breaking records with his long-running Killing series, best-selling author, television and radio personality Bill O'Reilly is launching a new series, the first title of which is called Confronting the Presidents. Bill O'Reilly, thanks very much for being with us once again. We appreciate it, as always. So,
nice to be back, Chris. Thanks for having me in.
Talk a little bit about wrapping up the Killing series. This was so successful, and clearly you enjoyed telling the stories, so many stories to tell. So was it a bit bittersweet to wrap up that series and kind of move on?
Well, the last one, Killing the Witches, it did very well, and that was the 13th Killing book.
Mm-hmm.
And it catapulted my co-author Martin Degard and I into the most successful nonfiction authors in the world. But, you know, I'm a historian, and so I look and I see where the country is and write something that's relevant to that.
Okay.
And so I knew about, obviously, that this was going to be a very intense vote. And my job is to provide information and also entertainment as an author about what's happening.
Yeah.
So we profiled 45 men, and each of them has their own chapter. And we tell you who they really were. No mythologizing, no demonizing, is who they really were.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what they did, good and bad. And we don't rank them. The reader ranks them. And the worthiness of the effort is that a lot of what happened in the past pertains to this election. For example, Kamala Harris is running a very intense campaign. However, she won't talk to the press.
Yeah.
Well, that happened before in 1920, the immortal Warren G. Harding did the same thing, wouldn't talk to the press. And he got elected because Americans were fed up with Woodrow Wilson and the Democrats. And he walks in, he was one of the worst presidents ever.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
And the message is, look, if you vote for somebody and you don't know what they believe or what their problem solving ability is,
mm-hmm.
you better watch out.
Yeah.
And that's where we are.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, and you kind of lay it out very clearly, because I was going to ask the inspiration for this new series, but you lay that out pretty effectively here. And it is interesting, some of the stories that go along with each of the presidents, both good and bad, and sometimes a different perspective on maybe what we thought we knew about these individuals.
Sure. We tell stories that nobody has any idea about, like George Washington's mother didn't really like him because George wouldn't give his mom the money that she wanted. And so she wrote letters to the newspapers saying, my son Georgie's trying to starve me. And it drove Washington, who was fighting the Revolutionary War at the time, absolutely insane. And, you know, we have stories about Teddy Roosevelt and his oldest daughter, Alice, trying to sneak boys into the White House, smoking. And Teddy is just, she's driving him crazy. John Quincy Adams walks up every morning, walks 4 miles down to the Potomac, and jumps in naked. He's skinny dipping. And, you know, people have no idea that all this stuff happened. So we do humanize them.
Yeah.
But we also say, look, you know, there were some very, very bad presidents and very good ones, and here's why.
Yeah. There have certainly been some characters that have held the office. I thought it was really interesting, some of the, I mean, you know, some of the famous presidents, I think we know, you know, what we think of them, Lincoln, FDR, Nixon, although there are some revelations about Nixon, Reagan. But you also talk about, I thought, like, for example, Woodrow Wilson, not a president we think about very often, but really, he was a very influential president in shaping the country that we have today with respect to our role as a world power?
Sure. I mean, Wilson got caught up in World War One. Didn't really want to get into it because the American people had no interest in going over to Europe. My grandfather was actually a hero in World War One, and at the Battle of Meuse-Argonne, which was a horrible, terrible situation. But Wilson, you know, a lot of the times, Chris, you read the book, and people, they expect these presidents to be one way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Wilson was a racist. I mean, he really hurt African Americans.
Yeah.
So he had a decent vision of incorporating the United States into the world, but on a personal front, the guy was really a rat.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. We present it, and then our readership is so strong. I mean, Confronting the President's open Sunday, number one on the New York Times list. That's the 19th time that has happened. That must bring them great joy over there to put my name at the top of that. 19, that's a world record, by the way. And so the reader is left to decide his or herself the worthiness of these presidents.
Let me ask about, you know, obviously shift to the modern day and President Biden. It's interesting you talk about how Joe Biden, the president, is much different than Joe Biden, the senator, was.
Biden is the second worst president in history, and that is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Dugard, my co-author, he dissents on that. The reason I have him so low, and the worst was James Buchanan, a coward, who did nothing to tamp down the ferocity of the South. So when Lincoln came in, if Civil War is a fait accompli. But the reason I have Biden down there so low is that Biden came into office and created problems. Most of our poor presidents came in and inherited the problems and couldn't deal with them. Herbert Hoover, Jimmy Carter, people like that.
Yeah.
But Biden, by himself, no Congress, no party, opens the border. Catastrophe. And we'll be dealing with that for decades to come. He spikes inflation from 1.4% to more than 9% by insane regulations and overprinting money. And then he surrenders in Afghanistan, sending a signal that the United States is weak. These are all personal things that he did to hurt his country, and has not admitted any mistakes nor explained why would you open the border when Trump had it pretty much locked down with Remain in Mexico. Never asked, never answered. So this is the kind of stuff we have. The book is fun to read. If you have any, bright kids or grandkids in the teens, because they don't teach this stuff, Chris, in public schools anymore. They don't, kids don't know. You go Warren G. Harding, they go, hey, that's a rapper. Yeah, I like Warren G. He's a rapper.
Right. But you also talk about Donald Trump as president has a bit of a mixed legacy as well, again, as Americans ponder whether to return him to the White House.
Right. There's a duality in most of the presidents. Thomas Jefferson's a good example, brilliant man, and provided protections for Americans that hold up to today, but he wasn't a very good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Trump governed pretty well, if you just go down what he did in 4 years. But his demeanor is so off-putting to so many Americans that gets lost. And his rhetoric about eating Cocker Spaniels. I mean, you can't, you're going to do that, your plight is so much harder.
Yeah.
I said on my radio and TV broadcast, and we live on BillO'Reilly.com, as you know, Chris.
Right.
If Trump would just run on issues and what he did, he would win pretty easily over the vice president, who has not been able to articulate very much.
Right. So it's that whether he could have the self-control to actually focus in that way. Really fascinating book, Confronting the Presidents. It is out now, and it's, as we mentioned, it's first of a new series. So real quickly, what are the plans for the future with this series?
Well, I can't tell you the titles because people then steal them. Well, we're going to do two more confronting books after this one is such a big hit that, you know, we've got two more to do. And then I'll probably retire to the villages and ride around a golf cart and play pickleball.
Somehow I just can't imagine that happening. Bill O'Reilly with us this morning. We have a link up for more information about the book. Bill, thanks very much for taking the time. As always, we appreciate it.
Yeah, we really appreciate you having us on, Chris. Thank you very much.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
Oktoberfest happening this weekend. We're putting the Hancock Historical Museum in the spotlight for their biggest annual event of the year, one of Findlay's biggest events of the year.
It is. The Oktoberfest Findlay celebrating the 10th year, and we're so proud it's become the largest single day event in this region.
Yeah, even better because it is the 10th anniversary. Sarah Foltz is with us from the Hancock Historical Museum. So where do we start on this? Obviously, we have beer. Oktoberfest would not be Oktoberfest without beer.
That's a perfect place to start. Is that your favorite part, too?
Sure.
You can't have a German Heritage Festival without adult beverages, right? And we love to have a whole array of local craft beers. Many of them are German style. So we'll have 10 local craft breweries from Northwest Ohio, in addition to several distributors, which can provide some German imports as well as some domestics.
Okay.
And some seltzers and wine for those who aren't a craft beer drinker.
Right.
That is a huge part of it, but we make sure that it is a safe and family-friendly event because this is so much more than
just the beer.
Yeah.
But we have to mention it. And what goes better with beer than German food? That's the other thing that we really love.
It's a perfect pair. Yeah. Yes. We have over 15 food vendors. This event has grown every year, and we really did not want it to be a wait in line type of an event. Mm-hmm. It's not fun to spend your whole time waiting in line.
Right.
So from Schmidt Sausage House out of Columbus, and then also Soms Market out of Cary, we have some delicious bratwurst. And then paired with that, so many other food vendors that have curated a menu that has German themed items. You have Lyle's Crepes out of Toledo. They have been a fan favorite with sweet and savory crepes. And then we also have some fun ones like Lego My Egg Roll and Johnny Burritos.
So a lot of bring your appetite along with your thirst.
Absolutely.
To the event. As we mentioned, a family-friendly event. So this is really, there's something for all ages.
Yes. You'll see at the festival site. Now, this does span 3 blocks of downtown Findlay. And that is to be able to fit everyone and also have a number of activities, like we said. So on the north end, you're going to see the main stage. You're going to see live music all day. And right by the courthouse, there is a kid zone. So Superior Trim sponsors a kids area that has over 20 activities for kids of all ages. So
awesome.
They're going to do crafts. They're going to do fun games. And that runs from 2 to 7 p.m.
Okay. You mentioned the live music. Who's going to be there?
So we are really excited. We are welcoming Dyna Brass to the stage. And they have actually become one of the most acclaimed Polish-American polka bands in America. So we're really proud to welcome them to Findlay, Ohio. And they will go on the stage at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
They're going to play until about 6, and then at 6:30, Fred Zwitch and his International Sound Machine, also a fan favorite, will be back.
They've been here before,
yes,
so
yes.
You know people are familiar. If you've been to Oktoberfest, it's going to be a good time. A lot of other things, not just activities for the kids, but activities for the grown-ups as well to participate and play around in.
That's right. At the complete opposite end of the festival, on the south end, there is a contest stage, which will run from 5 to 9. And this is always so fun to watch, even if you don't want to participate. But anything from a beer relay obstacle course. You're carrying beer on a tray and you have to complete the obstacle course. We always have a stein holding competition. We have a beer endurance competition. And then we also have a brat eating contest as well. So we're so excited for that. You can sign up at the festival that day starting at 3 o'clock, and we'll run those contests and give away some awards that evening.
All right. So give us all the particulars. It is happening on Saturday.
Yep. This Saturday, September 28th, we are going from 2 to 10:30 p.m.
Okay.
And then there are 3 admissions entrances. So you'll see signage when you arrive. All the area public parking lots will be open. And also parking is available on side streets. So this is a cash only event. So we do rely on ATMs around the area. If you don't come with cash that day, you will be okay. There's several ATMs. Premier Bank, our signature sponsor, they have one right at the corner of Main and Main Cross.
Okay.
And then also, it is $5 for ages 21 and up, $3 for under 21, and if you have kiddos and strollers, they're free.
And as we said, this is not only one of the biggest events, maybe the biggest single-day event on the calendar in Findlay each year, but as we said, a huge fundraiser for the Hancock Historical Museum as well.
This is the most vital fundraiser for our organization, for our operations. We are privately funded, so we don't receive any funds from the government. So this is one of those events that we do host rain or shine. We heavily rely on it to be able to keep our lights on and preserve over 100,000 artifacts.
And not only that, but to do all of the programs that you do with respect to the schools and, you know, all of the educational stuff, you know, all of the special events, all of the other special events really come out of this.
Yes. By the end of the year, we interact with well over 25,000 people, and those are education programs for all ages, a lot of school field trips, and we also provide so many resources for our community when you're thinking about our local history.
So we're having fun for a good cause. It is Oktoberfest Findlay this Saturday. And again, when does everything get underway?
We are opening the gates at 2:00 on Saturday.
We will see you there. Again, Sarah Foltz with the Hancock Historical Museum talking Oktoberfest this weekend. Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
Your football forecast for the games tonight, temperatures in the upper 60s, and almost a certainty that we will be seeing showers right at or just before game time. So you'll want an umbrella the beginning of the game. There's a good chance the rain will taper off the later we get into the game, and it might just be cloudy skies by the time everything is done. But you'll want to have an umbrella, or even better, a poncho handy. Keep yourself dry for the games tonight. After dispatching arch rival Fremont Ross last week, the Trojans are on the road at Springfield. The chance to even up their record to start the second half of the season. And on this week's Coach's Corner, host John Marshall spoke with Findlay head coach Stephen Adams.
Homecoming, 21-7 win with Ross scoring late in the fourth. You have to be pleased with the defense turning up the intensity a notch or two.
Yeah, I thought those guys did a great job on that side of the ball. I think great improvement from the prior week. Really happy with them, and they deserve a lot of praise after taking a lot of criticism after a rough stretch there. To hold a team under a little over 50 yards rushing, that's putting you in a position for a winning night.
The offense got things going early. It scored on the first drive. It looks like Landon Eckleberry is still progressing. Raglan and Hines, again, the top receivers, and the passing game seems to be headed in the right direction.
Yeah, we're still just developing kind of playmakers. As far as our QB goes, he's still growing. You know, going to have some of those growing pains. We've kind of found out and feel good about where we are after five games of knowing what our skill set is, what his skill set is, trying to make things as easy on him as possible. At the same time, getting the ball to our playmakers so that way they can get out in space and make plays.
2-3 through the first half of the season. Now it's time to pick up the pace as you head into divisional play.
New season.
In the Northern Lakes League. This week, you head up to Holland, just west of Toledo, to Springfield Community Stadium to meet the Springfield Blue Devils. They are 1-4, but last week their offense got some traction against Napoleon, scoring 26 points. Despite the loss, they appear to have found a way to put points on the board that hadn't happened in those first four games. Your defense going to have to bring that same tenacity this week as they showed last week. Is there a particular facet of the game that shows improvement from Springfield that they're starting to pick things up?
Yeah, I think about their program overall. I think they're just trying to grow. One thing that's been kind of, a high priority for them is to show discipline. You know, really they feel they have confidence that they have enough playmakers and guys that can give you fits and headaches, and they do. You know, I watched their offense. They moved their kind of dual threat quarterback. They moved him to receiver. And then put another guy that can throw the ball. And the objective is kind of what we talk about. Get the ball to your playmakers in space. Let those guys make plays. This is going to be a challenge. We told our guys we're going into divisional play now. And, you know, do not let their record be a distraction. They have athletes and they have guys who can give us fits. And if we look back at that Lyman game, they had some phenomenal athletes that gave us fits. We have to be disciplined, sound, get to the ball, tackle, and also be able to break tackles as well, too.
It seems you preach to your guys that it's all about playing Trojan football. How does that look to match up with that Springfield team?
Yeah, looks good. That's going to look good. I mean, it's going to be a challenge, like I said. I think they have some weapons that can hurt us. Defensively, they're simple, you know, but they're still trying to cause chaos. One guy returned from last year, so where you think there could be some inexperience, we can take advantage of that. But there's still some really good athletes that can kind of cause some fits, and, you know, if they want to play man coverage, could, you know, have potential to lock us up a little bit. So we have to be able to win the one-on-one matchup, and we talk about that a lot.
And you can say inexperience, but, you know, you're 5 games into the season.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I said they're growing. I mean, the program is growing. You know, I think they're going to look at us and see this is a great opportunity for them to pick up a win. And so we expect their very, very best, and they're going to get ours too.
Head coach Stephan Adams speaking with John Marshall on the Coach's Corner earlier this week. Trojans at Springfield tonight, and our coverage begins with tonight in high school football at 6:10 right here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. Other action from around the area on our family of stations over on 100.5 WKXA tonight and WKXA.com. It's Liberty Benton at Arlington. That's always a good matchup when those two teams get together. And on 106.3 The Fox and 106.3thefox.com, Ottawa Glandorf travels to Bath tonight, and you can follow all of the area action on the WFIN scoreboard page, powered by ScoreStream and presented by Owens Community College. Updates throughout the evening in real time from all of the games. And you can visit the WFIN scoreboard page at WFIN.com/scoreboard. Easy to remember, but we also have that linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. Best of luck to all of the area teams tonight. We start the second half of high school football's regular season.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news, and it's always kind of fun when we can have a broken news item that is fairly close to home. A family in Dayton, Ohio, narrowly escaped what could have very well have been a really bad situation thanks to their pet cat. Or maybe their cat almost got them into an explosive situation. Seems the homeowners, and I don't have the names here, just as the homeowners were making some renovations to their property when they noticed the cat was batting around one of its toys, only they didn't recognize the toy that the cat was playing with. Upon closer inspection, it appeared to be a hand grenade. So they called authorities, who in turn called the bomb squad, and indeed, it was a live hand grenade. The cat was playing with a grenade. The bomb squad removed the ordnance and set it off in a controlled environment, avoiding what could have been a very bad situation. That would have effectively taken care of all 9 lives. The cat and everybody else, I think, pretty effectively. How the grenade got there in the first place, they say, is anyone's guess. So, wow. That's wild. Glad to see that that story has a happy ending. Elsewhere in the broken news, stories of individuals who are not up for Parent of the Year awards. A mother and her children had to be escorted out of Disneyland's California Adventure theme park after allegedly trying to pass the kids off as toddlers so that they could enter for free. Video footage posted earlier this week shows the unidentified mom leaving in handcuffs as her two young girls hold on to her. Now that's a nice family photo. You put that in the family album right there. Hey, you remember that time when Mom got arrested for trying to sneak us into the happiest place on earth. She's accused of trying to pass the kids off as two-year-olds for free entry to the theme park. Anaheim officials say that the unidentified woman has been suspected of trying to pull this stunt in the past. So not the first time that she has tried this trick. Only she got caught this time. Not Mother of the Year. Her heart was in the right place, though, I guess. So there is that. Here's another couple that will not be in the running for Parents of the Year. Authorities in Arkansas have charged Darian Urban and Shailene Ehlers of Rogers, Arkansas, after they allegedly tried to trade their two-month-old child for a six-pack of beer and $1,000. Apparently, the pair were staying at a local campground and ran out of beer. And so what would anybody do in that situation when you're running low on beverages? Apparently, they tried to trade their baby for a six-pack and $1,000 at the Hideaway Campground and RV Park near Beaver Lake in the Ozarks. Despite claiming the exchange was part of an adoption plan, the couple now face criminal charges and have been detained. The Arkansas Department of Human Services currently is caring for the child. So, wow, that is that's pretty extreme. And not to be outdone, one more story of a woman who is not up for Mother of the Year. Out of Amarillo, Texas, Elizabeth Galindo has been arrested and faces federal charges after police found more than 9 pounds of methamphetamines in her home. Ms. Galindo is charged with intent to distribute. Police were investigating a series of related crimes that led them to Ms. Galindo's abode. Their investigation, their search, uncovered 6 ounces of meth in a Ziploc bag in a dresser with her ID and her Social Security card, along with 4 pounds of meth in another room, 5 pounds of meth hidden inside tin cans in a third bedroom. They also recovered several weapons from inside the home. And at the time of the arrest, Ms. Galindo told police that it was her 14-year-old son responsible for all of it. That's nice. Throw your kid under the bus on this. Wasn't me. 9 pounds of meth. And how she explained, or how she tried to explain that her 14-year-old son was responsible for the Ziploc bag with the drugs, her ID, and her Social Security card. Not sure, but authorities aren't buying it. Wasn't me. It was my son. That's nice. Not Mother of the Year. Here is our dumb criminal of the day. This from Madison, Wisconsin, where Jubo Barrett Davis was arrested early Monday morning. Apparently, a number of storefronts found windows broken out of their businesses. Somebody had been throwing bricks through the windows of the storefronts. An individual actually reported to police that a female victim says somebody tried to throw a brick at her head. And so they arrested Mr. Barrett Davis. he denied that he was the person that they were looking for, but he could not explain the brick in his hand. He was actually holding a brick at the time. Said, but he's not, but I'm not the guy that you're looking for. He's just randomly holding a brick, I suppose. He faces like 12 years in prison if he is convicted of the multiple crimes. They arrested him with a brick in his hand. I don't know how that got there. And finally, in the broken news this morning, little politics in the broken news, because it is election season. And this actually I'm surprised that this is the first time that we've heard of this happening. A Texas politician, a judge, no less, has been indicted for his alleged use of fake social media accounts. Here's the story. Judge K.P. George, Fort Bend County, is accused of using fake social media Facebook accounts. He created fake Facebook personalities to make racist comments about himself. So he creates these fake accounts. He posts really nasty things about himself under these other aliases. Investigators say it was all an effort to try and drum up sympathy for his campaign, to generate publicity and generate sympathy for his campaign. The charges include his former chief of staff, who was arrested back in June for pretty much the same crime, online misrepresentation. And as part of that investigation, Judge George was ordered to give his cell phone to the feds. So far, he has not stepped down from his role with the county. But I am really surprised that that is the first time that we've ever heard that. I can't imagine that he is the first politician to think of that scheme. I don't know if anyone ever has done that before, but he's being charged with creating that those social media accounts to drum up sympathy for his campaign. Wow. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. And with that, we now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Lance of OSU Extension. It's harvest season. Drivers will be sharing roads with combines and grain hauling vehicles. Please be alert, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this fall to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The only thing that we love more than football in this country, high school football, college football, NFL, the only thing we love more than football is tailgating before the game. According to a new study of 2,000, or a new survey rather, of 2,000 football fans, one in four people, I love this, one in four people have gone to a tailgate party even if they didn't have tickets to the game. And more than that, 22% of tailgaters say that they have stayed at the tailgate party even if they did have tickets to the game. No thanks, I'd rather hang out here than actually go to the stadium. That is wild. About half of tailgaters in the survey say it is rude to show up to a tailgate empty-handed. 32% bring snacks, 28% bring food, 16% bring the booze. And those are the people who get invited to all the best tailgates, right there. Those are the ones who are first to get the invite. On average, the tailgate party should start 2 hours before game time. They say tailgating isn't really about the game so much, or not just about the game. It is about the unforgettable moments shared with friends. Man, what a terrific show we have had today, and what a way to cap it off. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. And because it is Oktoberfest weekend,
yes,
we have kind of dug into the archives,
yes,
here.
Yes, we have.
And brought back some German recipes.
These are my favorite
for
German
Oktoberfest
recipes.
They're in honor of Oktoberfest.
Yummy, yummy.
And you remember, this has been, what, maybe a year ago now?
Yeah.
We did an Around the World thing and featured some German recipes.
Yes.
So thought we would pull these out.
Yes.
And
these were my favorites. They're so good. Good.
They are really good. Beginning with a crispy pork schnitzel recipe.
Yes. So this is olive oil for frying, 4 boneless pork chops, 1/4 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, 1 teaspoon of paprika, 1/2 teaspoon of black pepper, 2 large eggs, 1 tablespoon of heavy cream, 1 cup of panko breadcrumbs, and 1/2 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. So add enough oil to cover the bottom of a 10 or 12 inch heavy bottom pan. I use my iron skillet. Mm-hmm. Heat that to medium high heat. Trim the pork chops of any fat and then place between 2 sheets of parchment paper and use a heavy rolling pin or meat tenderizer to pound the pork chops and make them about 1/4 inch in thickness.
Okay.
So in a small bowl, then a shallow bowl, combine the flour, salt, garlic powder, paprika, black pepper, and mix until all combine. And then in another small bowl, whisk together your egg and your heavy cream. And then in the third bowl, mix together the panko crumbs and nutmeg. So one at a time, dip the pork chop into the flour, then and coat on both sides, then shake off any excess, then dip that into the egg, and then flip to coat both sides. Finally, transfer the pork chop to the breadcrumbs and coat both sides evenly.
Okay.
Place the coated pork chops in your pan with the hot oil. Cook for about 3 to 5 minutes per side until golden brown, about 140 degrees inside. Sprinkle with a little bit of salt, and soon as it comes out of the skillet, enjoy. Mm-hmm. So very easy.
Really easy, but just really yummy.
Make some
really yummy.
You can make some like gravy or whatever and put that with it and stuff. So good. One
crispy,
of my favorites.
Love pork it. Schnitzel for you. And to go along with that, a traditional German potato salad.
Yes. So 4 slices of bacon cut into 1/4 inch pieces, 1/2 a small yellow onion diced, 1 tablespoon minced garlic, 1 tablespoon honey, 1 tablespoon Dijon mustard, 3 tablespoons apple cider vinegar, 1/2 teaspoon of kosher salt, and 1/4 teaspoon freshly ground black pepper, and 1/8 cup of chopped fresh parsley if desired. That's an option. Place the potatoes in a large pot and cover them with cold water. Bring to a boil and season the water with some salt. Let the potatoes simmer for 10 to 15 minutes or until fork tender. But you don't want them overly soft, so don't go any more than that 15 minutes. And while the potatoes are cooking, fry your bacon in a large skillet over medium heat, and then transfer to a paper towel to get rid of all the grease and stuff. Drain the water from the potatoes. Leave them in a pot. Let them cool for about 5 minutes. Once cool to the touch, cut the potatoes into chunks and place them back into the pot. Saute your onions in the same large skillet that you use to fry your bacon for about 3 to 4 minutes. Add the garlic and cook a few more minutes. Then add your honey, your mustard, your salt, your pepper to the skillet. Whisk those together. Pour in the vinegar, stir for 1 to 2 minutes until slightly reduced. Pour the dressing over your chopped potatoes in the pot. Add your bacon, gently toss together. You want the potatoes to stay chunky and not get too mashed, and serve warm.
With the pork schnitzel, the German potato salad.
Yes. I think stuff. I have some German in me because, man, this is my type of food. I just love it.
it's comfort food for this time of year, for sure.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And then for dessert, and this is one of my favorites, German gingerbread style cookies, the Pfeffernuss.
Yes.
The Pfeffernuss.
That
sounds like one of the characters in one of those Rankin-Bass Christmas specials. Beware the Pfeffernuss. But in this case, it is a really yummy gingerbread style cookie.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to make these again
because
they were just amazing. 4 tablespoons of butter, 1 teaspoon ground cardamom, 1 teaspoon ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg, 1/2 teaspoon of allspice, 1/4 teaspoon of ground clove, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/3 cup of molasses, 1/2 cup of brown sugar firmly packed, 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1/4 cup of 1/4 cup slivers of almonds, 1/4 cup of candied orange peel, 1/2 a teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 a teaspoon of salt, 1 large egg, 1/2 a cup of confectioner's sugar, and more if needed. So I didn't even use the confectioner sugar. So it is medium in a small skillet, set over medium low heat. Melt your butter. Add your cardamom, your cinnamon, your nutmeg, your allspice, cloves, ginger, and cook for about 15 seconds.
15 seconds. So yep. I mean, this
whisk constantly.
Like, yeah,
yes,
really quick.
Yep. Pour your butter mixture into a large mixing bowl. Add your molasses and brown sugar until till combined. Set aside. Allow to cool completely. Add flour, almonds, orange peel, baking soda, and salt to the bowl of a food processor and process using the pulse method until mixture is finely ground. Whisk the eggs into the cold butter mixture, then whisk into the flour mixture just until incorporated. Shape the dough into discs, wrap with plastic wrap, and refrigerate until dough is firm, about 2 hours.
Okay.
Preheat your oven to 325 degrees. Line a baking sheet with parchment paper. Use a small cookie scoop to scoop the dough and then roll to form a ball. Place on a baking sheet about 1 inch apart. Bake in the preheated oven for about 10 minutes or until just set and your edges are golden brown. Let the cookies cool for a few minutes, then roll in the confectionery sugar. I did not do that. I sprinkled, before I baked, I sprinkled mine just with some cinnamon and sugar. And just
that was it?
Yes, that was okay. It. And I really like that taste.
Okay.
If you do it with the powdered sugar, you're just going to get more of a kind of a hard glaze on top of it.
Okay.
So, if you like the hard glaze, do that. If not, then do the cinnamon
just
sugar, whichever.
Yeah. Okay.
So set on a wire rack to cool. And when completely cool, you can roll it in some more confectionery sugar if you would like.
Yeah.
So and enjoy.
The Pfeffernuss.
Yes.
The German gingerbread style cookie to go along with the German potato salad and, yep, of course, the crispy pork schnitzel recipe. Some German flavors for you in honor of Oktoberfest.
Yes.
This weekend. Always look forward to,
yes,
that.
Yes.
Terrific stuff.
Hopefully it'll be nice.
Absolutely. We can avoid the rain.
Yes, avoid the rain and enjoy the evening.
Absolutely.
Some yummy food and yummy beer.
All of the recipes are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yep.
Go to at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. You can also find the link at our webpage at goodmornings.net. And my wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. And remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, we have details on the Alzheimer's Association's Echoes of Memory program coming up at the University of Findlay Alumni Memorial Union, exploring the journey of those with dementia. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.